Back on the Jefferson Exchange from Jefferson Public Radio, I'm John Baxter, and it's our monthly visit with entrepreneurs from around our region. We call it the ground floor. Turning a passion into a business is nothing new. Think Nike, for example. On this month's edition of the Ground Floor, we welcome Jeff DeBoer, who turned his interest in old-fashioned board games into an extremely successful retail business with both bricks and mortar stores in Ashland and Eugene, and also a major e-commerce presence. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning, John.
Thanks for being with us today. So take us back to the ground floor of fun again. Was this really born out of your particular love for board games?
I grew up playing board games in high school quite actively with my brother, who's still active in board games. And yeah, it was pretty much me and a group of friends, and I was involved for 15 of the last 22 years of our business. So I didn't found it, but I bought it from the owner, and I was an investor early on.
I understand. Okay. Yeah. And so were these board games, was this the era of like Dungeons and Dragons and that kind of thing, or were these more traditional board games?
A mixture of, there's a game called Squad Leader that was a World War II squad level war game. I also played Dungeons and Dragons a lot with my brothers and my friends. And we played other games like Magic Realm and different kinds. Avalon Hill was the publisher back in the day that did all the really cool board games.
Mm-hmm. And was your business initially selling new board games, or were you selling sort of classic, were you kind of maybe hitting the nostalgia market?
Initially, we did recycling of board games for fundraisers. Fun Again refers to the recycle of replaying a game. And we'd gather old games from people at churches or schools that were in their closets that were missing pieces, and put them all together and recollate them and then shrink wrap them and do a fundraiser. So, and our logo was originally the recycle sign.
Okay.
So Really Fun Again was a recycling game company, used games.
Originally. And so did you find a market for used games where you were actually,
yeah,
instead of just doing them as fundraisers, you started to sell them for fun and profit?
Right around that time, Germany started doing a big fair at Essen, and we went way back in 1996. We've been around for 22 years. And we went and learned about the German European board game hobby. And we started importing and translating rules and selling these games online. And that's when the first games we sold were import games from Europe.
And that, I understand, continues to be the case. A lot of your games are coming from Europe. Why the Europeans? Why are they so good at creating board games?
There's a, especially Germany, they have a tactile, anti-digital kind of cultural revolution. They always have. They've been very traditional. They like wooden pieces. They like their kids not to be on computers. Haba games is a perfect example of games that are wooden pieces designed by Germans. And that's just in their nature. And so they prefer to interact with people face-to-face with maps and tactile pieces, if that makes sense, more than we do.
Uh-huh.
It's a traditional thing.
So early on, every business that we encounter has certain crisis points of, you know, where it's like, wow, if we had gone one way or the other, you know, we wouldn't be working in this business. Can you think of any points like that in the early days of Fun Again where you made the right choice and it was a way to grow?
We were the first to start importing the German games and translating and selling them online. That went really well for 15, 20 years. Gradually, larger companies and more internationalization of the business happened. Amazon, in particular, created a challenge for us retailing games. We made a big crisis. We didn't really have much crisis the first 20 years of our business.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty much straight growth.
So in between my stints in public radio, I worked in the bicycle industry for a while, and I found that many of the people working in that industry, whether they're at the retail level or in marketing or manufacturing, got into it because they were really into cycling.
Mm-hmm.
But that enthusiasm doesn't necessarily translate into business skill.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, sometimes it can get in the way of success. Did you find yourself wrestling with that at Fun Again?
Well, most of the people in the board game hobby industry have daytime jobs, and they're not full-time in the business. So it's rather unusual for a company. Even when I started, I was originally had another job. I worked overseas in Japan for 15 years. I worked at Lithia Motors as a chief financial officer for 15 years as well. So I did these things on the side until I was able to make them my full-time vocation. And that's kind of a goal in the industry. I know hundreds of people around the country that are computer programmers, they're investment bankers, they're university professors. They do these jobs to make a living, and then they do board games on the side. But there's plenty of us now that have made it our full-time vocation. And we feel pretty lucky about that.
Jeff DeBoer is our guest this morning on the Ground Floor segment. He is the president of Fun Again Games. They have retail stores both in Ashland and Eugene and also a major online presence. If you have questions, maybe you're a gamer yourself and you want to talk to an expert, you can call us and join the conversation this morning on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So a huge ingredient in your success, as you mentioned, came from e-commerce. Yep. How early did you start selling online?
We were online in 1997. We were one of the very first retailers of any kind of products.
That's really
we
early.
We were really early, yep.
So at that time, nowadays, you can just go to any number of online vendors and open a store. It's pretty easy. You go to Shopify and, you know, the next day you're in business. Yep. But you must have had to create a lot of these systems from scratch.
We built them from scratch. Local family here in town called Marion, well, their names are Marion and Mike Vediner, and their son, David Vediner, is a very talented programmer. They worked in our shipping department every Christmas. All their whole family, 8-10 people, used to ship out games, and their son was a computer programmer, and he built us a wonderful custom-made platform back before Shopify or anything was available. It was open source software. It's called Open for Business, Firefox, and anyway, we built it ourselves, and we still use that system, even though some of the current systems may be a little more, you know, manageable and cheaper. Even ours is a legacy system; it works.
Right.
We had to create it ourselves, so.
And so that's not just a system for taking orders; that's the whole fulfillment chain, right? It includes taking orders, doing the billing, processing orders,
everything
and then
is programmed in the system. You mentioned fulfillment. And fulfillment has become a big thing because crowdfunding, you're familiar with Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. Kickstarter for crowdfunding is a huge phenomenon for board games, for movies, for books, for video games. There's over 100 board games a year launched, 100 a month launched on Kickstarter. You wouldn't believe that. But there's 100 board games a month launched on Kickstarter by creators from all over the world, Poland, Taiwan, Japan, U.S., and most of them get funded. And we learned that those creators need help because their full-time job is something else, usually very intelligent, high-level people, but they're putting their energy into building these board games and then putting them up on Kickstarter to get crowdfunded. And they raise anywhere from $50,000 to $3-5 million in one project. This has nothing to do with funding, and this is the creators.
Right.
But once they do it, we found out 4 years ago, since we'd been shipping games for 22 years, that we had a skill that they needed because they had 10,000 packages, 20,000 packages that needed to be sent out to backers from around the world. So we offered our services. It's called fulfillment services. And funding and fulfillment is actually now our core business. So our main business is just doing crowdfunding fulfillment. We have a large warehouse in Medford, and we have hundreds of publishers from all over the world. It's a global business. And we are the one company in the U.S. that's focused on fulfillment for board game crowdfunding.
And are you also warehousing these games?
Yep.
I mean, so somebody in Germany crowdfunds a game and they publish, I don't know, 10, 15,000 editions of it. They send it to you and you ship it out?
So our warehouse in Medford, it's 21,000 square feet, and it is full of board games from over 200 publishers from around the world. We do their daily fulfillment. If they have their own website and an order comes through, it comes directly to us in the morning. We ship out all their packages. So we're the warehouse and back end for over 200 publishers, not only in the U.S., but all over the world.
Jeff DeBoer is our guest this morning on the Ground Floor segment. He is talking about his business, Fun Again Games, and you can join the conversation at 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned this before, but I have to ask you about the 800-pound gorilla in the world of e-commerce, which is Amazon. Mm-hmm. How did you deal with them?
Well, like any business, the only way to compete with Amazon is a local presence where you offer something, and that's why I decided to keep my two board game cafes. I call them cafes. They're really lounges. where you can come in until 11, 12 o'clock at night and play games, meet people, like-minded people. Rather than go to a bar and drink, you can come to my place. You can play games, use your brain, some healthy entertainment. We do serve beer and cider, but you're limited to two drinks, and you have to be sitting down playing a game. So we're not a bar. But we are alternative entertainment. It's why our store downtown Ashland has been so popular. All the tourists come through. They don't want to go to bars and hang out. They'd rather go and do something with their friends and family, have a good time and learn something new and meet other people and socialize directly.
But I understand that Amazon is, when you're selling on Amazon, I've talked to a lot of e-commerce people who say that Amazon has become the majority of their e-commerce sales. Is that the case with you? And if so, how do you deal with the rules that Amazon plays by?
Well, we don't sell on Amazon anymore. We only do our own sales on our own website. We were one of the largest sellers on Amazon the last 5 years, but they take so much of a percentage, and there's very little profit left for a retailer. And then they learn the business, and then they take it over. And so they pushed us out and other small companies with a passion, because that's just what they do. They've done it in books. They've done it in industry after industry. They've done it in clothing now. They're going to do it in pharmaceuticals. They're basically going to take over our entire world, and someone needs to stop them.
And so they became your biggest competitor, I guess.
And that's what happens. A couple years, it's great, but then they watch your business. They learn. They get distributor relationships. And before you know it, they take it over. Their discounts are way bigger than I can get, and I'm done. And so I quit 2 years ago selling on Amazon. Actually, just this year, we slowly ramped it down. And then this year, we liquidated all of our warehouse inventory. We no longer sell games online. We only sell import games that are specialized, that are not available on Amazon, or games that our warehouse customers have from a Kickstarter that they don't have the ability because they're individuals, you know, and don't know the distribution system. But then they're in our warehouse, so we'll sell their games on our website. But that's all we sell now.
So you mentioned Kickstarter. Do you fund games directly yourself? Do you have designers come to you and say, hey, I've got this great idea for a game, but I need money?
You know, we don't really. We have too many publishers. If we did that, I mean, the timeline is a year out. So I could drop $100,000 into so many games a year out. But is that really worth it? There's plenty of other backers from around the world. So I tell my clients, no, we don't back their games.
Jeff DeBoer is the president of Fun Again Games here on the monthly segment we have with entrepreneurs in Southern Oregon and Northern California called The Ground Floor. And if you'd like to join the conversation, maybe you're into board games or computer games, 800-838-3760 is the number to call to join the conversation, or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. You alluded to this, but I've got to ask the question directly. You know, this is an era where the game industry is dominated by digital entertainment, computer games, video games. Why is there still this interest in board games?
So it's the human interaction. The biggest adopters of board games the last 2 years, and the industry is growing at over 20% a year currently, it's huge growth, is video gamers. If you go to PAX in Seattle or PAX East, they have a new – this is the big video game convention. There's hundreds of thousands of people that go. Our convention has been 50,000 in the U.S. The convention in Germany, Essen, is 150,000 people that go, the one that we've been to for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And we still import and buy games from there. But there's a new convention called PAX Unplugged, and it's unplugging the digital computer, and it's growing like crazy. And the video gamers are just buying these things like crazy right now. It's the human interaction, the same entertainment, but it's face-to-face with people, direct interaction. Parents prefer it. It's great for families. The reason I'm so passionate is I raised my kids playing board games. Didn't want them on the computers as much. They played some, but I had something else to counter it with. And so many parents have nothing to counter it with. They can barely get their kids' attention. It's really sad. This is something that'll attract them and come play with their mom and dad. Come play with their grandpa. Come play with their brothers and sisters. Come talk and be like a normal human and interact with people. That's why the Germans have made this such a worldwide phenomena, is there's value to people interacting and talking to each other, not everything digital. And so I know that's why. It's a counter-revolution. It's an analog revolution, I call it, to the digital.
Analog counter-revolution. So are there any particular trends in content that you see in board games?
More and more we're seeing, I mean, like science games. My wife and I just last night terraformed Mars together. It took us 3 hours, but we had a wonderful time terraforming Mars. It's all the science behind terraforming Mars over a 400-year period, done by a PhD in science in Sweden. It's a Swedish game. But it's here in my hands because, you know, it was popular.
It's right here in the studio. We actually probably have room on this table to play this game later.
It's pretty big. There's a game here about winemaking called Viticulture. It's running a winery. There's a game about the Grand Austria Hotel, running this old hotel that had all these diplomats and politicians and dignitaries from around the world that come and visit and want to eat in your restaurant and then sleep in your rooms. It's managing all that. There's a game here called Brass about the Industrial Revolution in Birmingham and Lancashire, England, about the cotton mills and the steel and coal industries and the manufactured goods. And so economic games, science games. There's games about running hospitals. I have a game called Clinic from a designer in France. Comes in a little dossier like a doctor would carry around. The game comes in and you open it up, has a little clipboard. And it's called Clinic, and it's about running a hospital. And the guy that does it runs hospitals. So it is very accurate and very detailed of the challenges that running a hospital involves.
A lot more sophisticated than the game Operation that we always
yeah,
grew up with.
That's right.
We're going to take a call here on the Jefferson Exchange. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-838-3760 is the number. Or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Helga in Talent. Good morning. Helga, are you there? Helga? I guess she isn't with us, but she did leave a question behind. She said, would you consider a puzzle a game?
We sell puzzles, and a lot of people that play games like to play puzzles, so yes, we do. In fact, I'll mention most of the games that I have here today, and I mentioned the designers are kind enough to develop a solitaire version of the game. So you can play most of these games solitaire. It's a special design. There's a different goal. But you can play it and learn the game that way and then teach it to your family and friends. And it's interesting.
Is that a reaction to video gaming? Because so much video gaming is done by oneself.
So there's a game called Gloomhaven that came out last year. It was a 22-pound massive box. We sent 20,000 of these copies out. It was a $150 game. There is literally, they said 2 years, if you played it 8 hours a day for 2 years, there's enough content in that box, and it's character building. There's things that you open, cards that you rip up. It's a story. There's legacy games about saving the world, one called Pandemic. There's one called Pandemic 2 that after the world has been destroyed, you rediscover the world, and you play it over 24 games. It's a story programmed and developed. You open boxes at certain times. You open decks of cards. You tear up cards. You change the rules. You put stickers on the board. You put stickers in the rule book. The game evolves, and everybody that plays it has a different experience. It's never the same game because whatever group you're playing with decides what characters you play, what abilities you take, how the game develops. And so it's a programming thing. It's the same thing as programming, but it's done analog with board games and physical pieces.
Jeff DeBoer of Fun Again Games is our guest this morning here on the Jefferson Exchange, and this is the ground floor segment, and we're going to take another call here. This is from Gail in Eugene. Good morning, Gail. Hello, Gail. Are you there? Let's try it again. Gail? We seem to be having kind of a difficult time with our phones this morning. Let me try this again. Gail, are you with us? Guess not. Gail says board games that are educational have a good home in schools. Are you seeing much of a market in schools?
We've always donated games over the last 20 years to schools. We had drawings every single month for schools and military bases. We have a lot of military bases around the world that buy from Fun Again. The South Pole Expedition Center orders a box of games from us every single year. And so, yes, we see a lot of school. We do a lot of donations and events with schools about education because a lot of these games are super educational.
So how do you maintain your edge in terms of identifying trends in gaming and kind of staying out there ahead of the market?
Well, fortunately, for the last 20 years, I've traveled to, I go 4 or 5 times a year to big events around the world. I went to Tokyo Game Market 2 years ago to see the Tokyo market. I'm going to Taiwan. Next year, I'm going to the UK Game Expo in Birmingham. Next year, we always go to Germany. I mentioned that one. So I'm there on site meeting all the publishers and all the companies that are clients of ours and listening to them and changing my business model. Our big decision to quit retailing online and to just do the fulfillment was based on the huge demand. I'm signing up literally 2 or 3 new projects a week, sometimes more. I get 5 to 10 inquiries every single week from new publishers that want help with their fulfillment of their Kickstarter. That's how much demand there is.
We heard from Nick in Central Point, and Nick says, I have a son who loves board games and wants to get into the business. What's the next step for him?
A lot of our, like our stores, we have events on Tuesdays and Thursday nights in Ashland and in Eugene where you can come and play games. We have some kids there that develop games and design games that we help them. I've got a couple kids here in Ashland that just seem brilliant, and you can tell they're working on an idea and they want to design a board game. That's the creative part that I was going to touch on. There's a huge creative, artistic. You wouldn't believe the quality of the artwork on some of these games. There's a game called Scythe that's about World War II, with Tesla was successful, and he made robots that fought in World War II, actual robots, big mechanical robots that fought, not tanks, but smart ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have happened if Tesla had been a little bit more, you know, adept and got to that point. And the artwork is all about farmers. It was actually World War I, I'm sorry. This was way back. This was like if he'd really made progress. And the artwork is fabulous. It's like farmers and peasants with these mechanical robots that are moving around in the background. There's a whole art book about it. So the creative part, not only the game design and the mechanisms, but the art part, there's just so much opportunity for people. And there's thousands of people around the world that spend time putting their energy into these things.
So what's next for Fun Again? Do you have any great initiatives on the horizon?
We're opening a new warehouse on the East Coast, and we're also going to open one in Europe and in China so that we can do global fulfillment, because our customers don't want to talk to 4 different people in each region. They want one company. So we're in the process of acquiring or opening a warehouse in Indianapolis, which is right in the center of the U.S., and it's where Gen Con is every year. We have a French partner that we're probably going to do a warehouse in France with, and one in China. So we'll be able to take any project and do the entire world fulfillment in one shot. And that really helps the creators.
Yeah. Jeff DeBoer, the owner of Fun Again Games in Ashland, locations in Ashland and Eugene, and online.